This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org. Everyone, tell all your friends, remind them so they don't get frustrated as I've come across this problem all the time. Tell them to click on the red oval, the big red oval on top of the little cartoon picture of a radio transmitter on our website's main page, freakradio.org. It is 3:02 p.m. November 25, 2013. And if that matches evenly with your time's personal time-space continuum, you know the show is live. This is the Mideast Madness Show for Monday, November 25. My name is Ren. Ren as in R-E-N. Alrighty. Simplify things a little there. Ah! I lost my personal place.
That's the, I'm getting all this weird stuff now.
I'm really sorry, my friends. You know, you come in here, you sit and do some work here, do a program for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And the next time you're in here, there's a funny green tint to the computer monitor, or you're getting things are showing themselves in a different way all of a sudden. That's usually half the time that's good because it means automatic updates are being laid down on this computer from the source provider. But it's still kind of scary sometimes.
Let's see.
Okay, very good. Save that. People who were with me for Mideast Madness, the weekend edition, 2 days ago, may recall that most of the show was taken up by the reading of the first three or four chapters of a book that was just released this year entitled Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. Pretty scary stuff, pretty horrendous stuff in that book. Now, I said 2 days ago that by no means do I intend to read the entire book over the course of this show. Well, I may have changed my mind. I figure, well, for one thing, not too many people read whole books these days, so I'm going to read at you. And I will continue to read the book in complete chronological order, front to back, front cover to back cover. I mean, not every little bit of information, Library of Congress card and all that stuff, but basically read every chapter of every part in the book. Too bad I won't be able to read maps to you. It's kind of dismal how all these books about the Middle East, the big main long-standing conflict between Israelis and Arabs, between Jews and Muslims, and between Jews and Christians, and between Muslims and Christians and everyone else. All these books have the mandatory map of Palestine before 1948, or before November 29 of 1947, when the United Nations partitioned Palestine, and Israel and the occupied territories today, they all have those maps, as well they should. It's just, there's something dismal about always having to look at that sorry situation there, that geographic situation as is represented cartographically. Then again, it's one of those things people have to have shoved into their eyes and down their throats until they get it. Palestine, or that those portions remaining from the British Mandate of Palestine following World War I. It's also referred to as historic Palestine, as well as well it should. Those portions that are not recognized to be the current Jewish state of Israel is less than a quarter. It's only 22% of the British Mandate of Palestine, historic Palestine. And even all of that space, all of that, those occupied territories, State of Palestine, as it wants to be, as it prefers to be called, is controlled directly or indirectly by the Israeli military. And even Gaza, which, short of being pronounced a State of Palestine in Gaza, or short of being pronounced fully independent as an independent sovereign state, did experience in 2005 the pulling out of all Jewish settlements, which lived entirely separate, isolated from the native Palestinian Arab community in Gaza. Then the government told them that they had to pull up stakes and leave, and of course, most of the Jews there threw a big fit. The most militant, most ardent Jewish Zionists who are Israelis have populated these illegal settlements in Gaza and in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem. The most ardent, most militant zealot Zionists are the ones who prefer to push the frontier, which has been an expression of the settlement Zionists, it probably still is. It's as though they're the white Europeans who have it from God that they have every right to push into the red man's territory, or the, for that matter, the red Arab's territory in Palestine. They literally had to be carried out kicking and screaming from these settlements that were being abandoned by Israel in the Gaza Strip. And of course, the only reason why they did this was to earn minimal praise from the rest of the world, while Israel continued to concentrate its efforts of establishing, growing, and expanding all the rest of the illegal settlements in the West Bank. They decided it was more politically viable for them to dump Gaza, for the time being anyway, and leave the Gazan Palestinians to their own devices. That was in 2005. Life is absolutely miserable in Gaza now, having not nearly so much to do with the existing Hamas government of the Palestinians there as it does to do with Israel's so-called defense forces, heavily restricting, severely restricting transit of people and goods out of and into the Gaza Strip by land, by air, and by sea. No vessels other than Israeli naval vessels, or anyone that the Israeli government lets pass, which is basically nobody else, are allowed to enter the port of Gaza City or any other part of the shores of the Gaza Strip. No one may enter. And This is something, of course, that you basically never hear about in the United States mainstream media. I'm getting all these expressions down now after a year and a half almost of doing this program. Mainstream media, the native indigenous Palestinians. How often I repeat these and repeat these. Tried and true expressions. Let me go back up. Let's see. Who's listening to this show? Okay. Very encouraging. Let me give you the phone numbers to Mideast Madness this 25th day of November. It is now 3:12 in the afternoon. So you know this is a live show if that matches up with your... Here's another expression I really love. Your personal time-space continuum. You know the show is live. My name is Ren. The area code directly here to the live studio is... The area code is 831. And the rest of the seven-digit phone number is 427-3772. Again, here in Santa Cruz County, California. 831-427-3772. No hard and fast plan to my presentation with you this afternoon. I'm just going to transmit to you some stuff that has been transmitted to me that I think may be of interest. This comes from the United Nations UN News Center. I'm on their e-list, so I get these dispatches all the times. I'm as critical as anyone might be of the United Nations and the things that it done, that it has done, things that it doesn't do, or hasn't succeeded in doing yet. I still believe in the concept of the United Nations as limited, inherently limited, as its power may be on a globe with over 200 nations with highly, highly disparate interests. You go even only a couple of hundred miles away and people's priorities can be almost the reverse of one another. It's really hard to get people to come together and talk when you're talking about the entire world. It's even harder to get them to come together and do. All right. Voicing solidarity with the Palestinian cause, United Nations officials stress the importance of resumed peace talks. This, by the way, dated today. I was thinking it was another one. I'll just read it to you anyway. New York, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, of course. United Nations officials today voiced their solidarity with the people of Palestine in their aspirations for independence and sovereignty and stressed the importance of ongoing peace talks aimed at a two-state solution, which must be given a chance to bear fruit. We cannot afford to lose the current moment of opportunity, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said in a message read on his behalf to the observance of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. Ah, the UN, I'm breaking away here for a moment, the UN does have, it seems, about every other day, or every week or so, to have an official observance, International Day of so-and-so. Well, that's where this particular message is coming from the fact that this is in observance of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. And most likely the reason why we're hearing about this now is because it was on November 29th. Here it is, the 25th. It was on 11/29 in the year 1947 that the UN officially imparted upon the British territory. 1947, Palestine was still in British hands following the First World War, even following the Second World War at this point. Great Britain actually wanted to rid itself. It wanted to dump Palestine so it could pursue other economic interests and kind of pull in the reins of its great former empire and get real with the 20th century. So on November 29, 1947, the UN partitioned that British territory between the native Palestinian Arabs, calling that portion the Arab State Area, and the other part would be the Jewish State Area. This plan was actually drafted by the Zionists for the United Nations, and there were dirty tricks involved in implementing the partition. Dirty tricks as in threats to those who refused, who would otherwise refuse to support the plan, and the promise of benefit and wealth to those promised by the Zionists to those participants in the U.S., in the United Nations General Assembly, who would support it. So, it'll probably even say, yeah, here it is. Yeah, it is on the 29th of November, the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, continuing with the dispatch now, with the UN dispatch. Ban Ki-moon said, "I ask all in the international community to work together to translate the solidarity expressed on this occasion into positive action for peace and justice." The special meeting held at UN headquarters comes ahead of the International Day observed annually on 29 November. The day marks the date in 1947 when the General Assembly adopted a resolution partitioning then-mandated Palestine, meaning under British control, into two states, one Jewish and one Arab. Mr. Ban stated, "The goal remains clear, an end to the occupation that started in 1967 and the creation of a sovereign, independent, and viable state of Palestine based on the 1967 borders, living side by side in peace with a secure state of Israel," Mr. Ban stated. "Jerusalem is to," and he continues to say here, "Jerusalem is to emerge from negotiations as the capital of two states." I'll say that again. As per this UN dispatch, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says, quote, "Jerusalem is to emerge from negotiations as the capital of two states with arrangements for the holy sites acceptable to all. An agreed solution must be found for millions of Palestinian refugees around the region," end quote. He doesn't say around the world. He just said around that Middle Eastern region, the region of the Holy Land. Continuing, "Israelis and Palestinians resumed direct negotiations in August, thanks to the efforts of United States Secretary of State John Kerry, following a three-year hiatus owing to Israel's refusal to extend its freeze on settlement activity in the occupied Palestinian territory. After decades of talk and, quote-unquote, far too many adverse developments on the ground, Mr. Ban urged Palestinian and Israeli leaders to take the decisions that will usher in a political solution to this serious and long-standing conflict." "The chair of the General Assembly's Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People, Abdel Salam Diallo, called on the international community to seize what seems to be one of the last opportunities to promote a negotiated solution." Mr. Diallo said, "Time is running out. The negotiating process is endangered by certain policies, and particularly by the ongoing establishment of Jewish settlements," he told the meeting. Later today, Mr. Diallo will introduce several draft resolutions related to the question of Palestine to the General Assembly, which will be asked to, among other things, declare 2014 as the International Year of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. He wants to declare the entire year 2014 as, quote, the International Year of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. General Assembly President John Ash welcomed the committee's initiative to have 2014 proclaimed as the International Year of Solidarity with the Palestinian people and called for using it to redouble efforts to create the necessary environment for successful peace talks. John Ash said the following: ongoing peace negotiations must be given a chance for peace to take root and flourish, but peace cannot be meaningful and durable without taking fully into account the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people, which are key to the solution of the Arab-Israeli conflict in the Middle East. He continues to say, Mr. Ash continues to say, I call on the governments and people of both Israel and Palestine to avoid actions that would undermine the fragile hope created by this renewed round of negotiations and to cease and desist from any actions that are in contravention to international law and would pose a major impediment to peace in the Middle East. More importantly, render the two-state solution impossible. I think that's a really important paragraph. I'm going to read it again. General Assembly of the United Nations President John Ash said, among other things, quote, I call on the governments and people of both Israel and Palestine to avoid actions that would undermine the fragile hope created by this renewed round of negotiations and to cease and desist from any actions that are in contravention to international law and would pose a major impediment to peace in the Middle East and, more importantly, render the two-state solution impossible, said Mr. Ash. Speaking on behalf of the UN agency responsible for assisting 5 million Palestinian refugees, Filippo Grandi said that solidarity, which transcends political and financial support, is crucial because it makes Palestinians feel that they are not alone. Mr. Grandi, the outgoing Commissioner General of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, in short called UNRWA or UNRWA, UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, UNRWA, said his organization is, quote, sadly familiar with this loneliness, given how closely it works with refugees whose plight has remained unresolved for over six decades. As part of the observance of the International Day, the Palestinian Rights Committee will hold a concert later today featuring two Palestinian singers, Mohammed Asaf, UNRWA Regional Youth Ambassador and winner of Arab Idol 2013. That's right, folks. Winner of Arab Idol, IDOL 2013. And the other performer will be Nai Barghouti. The committee is also screening the documentary film State 194. That's the name of the film, State 194, which focuses on former Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad's 2009 plan to demonstrate that his people are deserving of statehood, inspiring them to change their destiny and seek United Nations membership. For you all out there, for more details, you can go to the UN News Center at www.un.org/news. That's un.org/news. Okay. I want to see if I can get to this other UN dispatch. This is the one I thought it was. This came out November 20th. Well, here we are already on the 25th. So this was from 5 days ago. Veteran Red Cross official to head the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. November 20, New York. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon announced the appointment today of a veteran Red Cross official to head the main United Nations agency responsible for Palestinian refugees. Pierre Krähenbühl of Switzerland, currently the Director of Operations at the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, overseeing 12,000 staff in 80 countries, succeeds Filippo Grandi of Italy as Commissioner General of the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East. Prior to his current Red Cross post, he served as personal advisor to the president of the ICRC 2000-2002, carrying out various field assignments in El Salvador, Peru, Afghanistan, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Bosnia-Herzegovina, of course, being the core constituent republic, once upon a time, of the former Yugoslavia. And before that, he was head of operations for Central and Southeastern Europe. Mr. Krähenbühl brings to the position a wealth of experience and dedicated passion in humanitarian development and human rights action, coupled with strategic leadership experience in politically sensitive and high-risk environments, spokesperson Farhan Haq said. Mr. Bon lauded Mr. Grandi's, the outgoing director, outstanding dedication and commitment to the Palestinian people. Established by the United Nations General Assembly in 1949, after the 1948 Arab-Israeli conflict to carry out direct relief and works programs for Palestinian refugees, UNRWA currently provides services including education, health, social safety net assistance, and microfinancing to some 5 million Palestinian refugees and their descendants. Yes, folks, and their descendants in the West Bank and Gaza, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. It's almost 3:30 p.m. here in the west coast of North America. You're listening to the Mideast Madness radio program on Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org. I'll give you the phone number again. It's only one phone number for you to write down or attempt to memorize. Area code 831-427-3772. That's 831-427-3772. And yes, we're still recording. I do record these shows, by the way, so as I can put them up in the archive, which is located on another website. For recordings of past programs of Mideast Madness, go to radioforall.net. That's R-E-D-I-O, the numerical character 4, A-L-L.N-E-T, radioforall.net, radioforall.net, and then just go there and type in Mideast Madness and select by title or date. Anything you think you might be interested in. I also usually if I had the time and if I remember, I'll send a copy of my programs to Santa Cruz Indie Bay. That's I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y. Santa Cruz Indie Bay. So you can get them there too. And of course, or in the course of the next 7 days, until the next Monday edition of Mideast Madness, this program, or others in my personal folder, will be repeated or refed, as they say in the radio business. You can hear a refeed of the program that may pop up at any time if you listen with any regularity or lack of regularity, just Free Radio Santa Cruz. Let's see here. A lot of important technical work to be done here. I'm not ignoring you, my friends. I'm, all right. I've spoken about the Prawer Plan. P-R-A-W-E-R, the Prawer Plan. Being tossed back and forth, but on a pretty definite course for ratification in the Israeli parliament, or their Knesset, for uprooting and ethnically cleansing over 40,000. I do get my numerical facts mixed up from time to time. Some 40,000 Bedouin Arabs who are Palestinians from their ancestral homelands in the Nakab or Negev desert of Israel. We're not talking about the militarily occupied territories of the West Bank or the militarily intimidated territory of the Gaza Strip. We're talking about inside Green Line accepted recognized state of Israel. Over 40,000 Bedouin Arabs are getting closer and closer to be, under legal Israeli law, thrown out of their longtime stomping and breeding grounds, their ancestral homes, in the Israeli desert. This, of course, to make room for Israeli and by far Jewish-only oriented developments such as new settlements, economic industrial parks. Again, primarily, if not exclusively, for the use of Israeli Jews only. Jewish Israelis. And it goes without saying, military establishments, new military facilities, and perhaps the expansion of existing ones into these Bedouin ancestral grounds. There is a little bit of heart-rendingness here from Jewish Voice for Peace, which carries the sideline, Israelis and Palestinians, two peoples, one future. I got this from them. Diren, that's me. The Prawer Plan, threatening to displace over 40,000 Israeli Bedouin Arabs, continues to be debated at the Israeli Knesset. International pressure continues to be critical. Thank you for adding your voice in opposition to this human rights disaster in the making. We at JVP are working with Avaz.org, our partner on the ground, to deliver our petition to the Knesset committee before they vote, though we don't yet know when that will be. On Saturday, November 30th, this coming Saturday, activists in the Negev, Nakab, and around Israel-Palestine are calling for a day of rage, a day of rage against the Prawer Plan. That day is in the middle of the Thanksgiving holiday weekend here in the United States. This is critical, folks. That day is in the middle of the Thanksgiving holiday weekend here in the U.S., all the more reason to bring Prawer and the renewed threat of forcible removal of indigenous people from their land to your Thanksgiving table. We have prepared a handout to help bring these conversations into your Thanksgiving and or Hanukkah gatherings, the Jewish celebration of Hanukkah, which I believe on this particular year, 2013, the first day of Hanukkah coincides with the day of Thanksgiving. Please share it far and wide. We will keep you posted as we learn when the petition is delivered and what the next action steps are to stop the Prawer Plan. Onward, signed Rabbi Alyssa Wise. P.S. Would still be great to get more voices opposed to Prower to deliver Knesset. To deliver to the Knesset, I think they mean. Encourage your friends and family to sign the petition at jbp.org/stopPrower. Again, Prower is spelled P as in Paul, R-A-W-E-R. jbp.org/stopPrower. Let's take a look at this handout that they're talking about. Okay, we're loading that up. Again, JVP stands for Jewish Voice for Peace, which is, I believe, an American-born effort, primarily by American Jews, but not exclusively Jews. A gathering of those who are not afraid to call Israel on its highly divisive actions and policies and the actions of its very mighty military force. I understand the Israeli army is the sixth largest in the world. I'm not sure how all that's measured, but it's probably measured in terms of the portion of their gross national project that goes into the military, the degree of high technology that it uses, state-of-the-art technology in killing unarmed people, etc. So far, it's proved itself to be quite invincible. Okay. The handout says at the top, this Thanksgiving, commit to not allowing history to repeat itself. In the year 1838, the United States Congress voted to displace 12,000 Cherokee Indians from their native land, which was in southeastern United States, good old Dixie. Says here, Israel's Prower plan, currently being debated at the Israeli Knesset, will do the same to 40,000 of Israel's own Bedouin citizens. And again, those numbers, back in 1838, roughly 175 years ago, U.S. Congress voted to displace 12,000 Cherokee. The Prower plan in Israel will displace 40,000 of its own Bedouin Arab citizens, who they will never also refer to as Palestinians. The Israelis do not like to even say the word Palestine or Palestinian. 12,000 Cherokee versus 40,000 Bedouins. Ah, fascinating comparison here. President Andrew Jackson's case. The seventh president of the United States, Andrew Jackson's case for the Indian Removal Act, December 8th, 1829. Toward the aborigines of the country, no one can indulge a more friendly feeling than myself. Or would go further in attempting to reclaim them from their wandering habits and make them a happy, prosperous people. I have endeavored to impress upon them my own solemn convictions of duties and powers of the general government in relation to the state authorities for the justice of the laws passed by the states within the scope of their reserve powers. They are not responsible to this government. As individuals, we may entertain and express our opinions of their acts, but as a government, we have as little right to control them as we have to prescribe laws for other nations. Slight lapse in the text here. Goes on to say, and is it supposed that the wandering savage has a stronger attachment to his home than the settled, civilized Christian? Is it more afflicting to him to leave the graves of his fathers than it is to our brothers and children? rightly considered the policy of the general government where the red man is not only liberal, but generous. He is unwilling to submit to the laws of the states and mingle with their populations to save him from this alternative, or perhaps utter annihilation. The general government, meaning Washington, D.C., kindly offers the native Cherokee and other Indian tribes a new home and proposes to pay the whole expense of his removal and settlement. Excerpts taken from U.S. President Andrew Jackson's case for the Indian Removal Act back in 1829. This is drawn up right alongside this other box, namely the Israeli government's case for the Begin slash Power plan. The Begin slash Power plan. Begin, B-E-G-I-N, refers to Menachem Begin, the late former Prime Minister of the State of Israel. November 4, 2013, just this very month. Quote, recognizing that the Bedouin of the Negev need assistance, the government of Israel created a comprehensive policy called the Begin Plan, aimed at improving their economic, social, and living conditions, as well as resolving long-standing land issues. There have been attempts to attack the Begin Plan. This opposition is unfortunate, particularly for the Bedouin, who will benefit greatly from the Begin Plan. This new policy constitutes a major step forward towards integrating the Bedouin more fully into Israel's multicultural society while still preserving their unique culture and heritage. More importantly, the Begin Plan guarantees a better future for Bedouin children. No longer will they have to reside in isolated shacks without electricity or proper sewage. Now they will live closer to schools and will be able to walk home safely on sidewalks with street lights alongside paved roads. They will have easier access to health clinics and educational opportunities. Their parents will enjoy greater economic prospects, bettering the economic situation of the whole family. To oppose the Begin Plan is to oppose improving the lives of Bedouin children. That is taken from the statement of the current contemporary Israeli government. Okay, let's take a closer look at this statement. If all these wonderful things are going to happen for the Bedouin Palestinians, why are the Bedouin Palestinians so ardently opposed to its implementation? Why do they not want to leave? You've heard me say several times in the last few minutes that the Bedouin currently reside on their own ancient ancestral grounds. This statement puts all the emphasis on how, supposedly, implementation of the Power Plan will better the lives of these Arabs. Highly unusual for the government of Israel, for anyone in Israel, at least of a strong Zionist persuasion, to do anything so altruistically, so outgoingly in favor of Arabs. Highly unusual. What they're not telling you is while they're doing all these wonderful things for the current generation of Bedouins and their children and their grandchildren is, just as I stated earlier, the government and elements in Israeli society covet the desert, wants to develop it for Israeli purposes. For many, many years, the Bedouin Palestinians have had to suffer without electricity and proper sewage, only because the Israeli government refused equitable allotments of this infrastructure, of these facilities, to the Bedouins, where they live now and where they prefer to remain. There is a long-going and enormous disparity. It fluctuates, I suppose, in some comparisons, but there is a notable disparity between the development of life in Israeli cities and on Israeli kibbutzim and farms, towns in the country, farther away from the big cities. When you compare that to infrastructural development for the Arabs who live largely isolated, the ones who do not live in the big cities, they also tend to be isolated from the Jews too, particularly in Jerusalem, highly so in the case of Jerusalem. But the Israelis now are acting like they're suddenly doing this wonderful, benevolent thing for the Bedouins, which they have refused for many, many years, decades perhaps, to do for the Bedouins while they were living on their own lands. The central force of the Begin Plan, now called the Prower Plan, as they put it here, is to guarantee a better future for Bedouin children. But as I've explained to you again, this is a sidelight for the Israelis' real purpose of just taking over the whole Nakab or Negev Desert. Nakab is the Arab pronunciation. Negev is the Israeli Hebrew pronunciation. Again, promising the Bedouins easier access to health clinics and educational opportunities. Well, they refuse to build or allow the Bedouin Arabs to build of their own accord prosperous and thriving health clinics and educational opportunities where they live. And if the Israelis claim that the parents will enjoy greater employment prospects, bettering the economic situation of the whole family, again, this was deprived of them in the current demographic situation. And the facts on the ground, that other wonderful, infamous, or famous, depending on your viewpoint, expression, facts on the ground are that Israeli society is becoming less and less multi-religious, making distinct, strong economic distinctions between being a Jew and being a Muslim or a Christian or anything else. That is reflected in hiring policies, reflected in the education of the respective children of these different peoples and different religions. According to a number of polls, surveys taken amongst Israeli Jews, in most cases, half or more, and in some of those cases, way more than half of Israelis still would rather not, if not outright refuse, to have their children in the same classrooms as Arab Palestinians. Whether or not they want to call them Palestinians, most Israelis tend to be ardently opposed to their children mixing in the educational environment. According to these same surveys, Israelis actually go so far as to admit that Israel is an apartheid state. And they sanction that. They say that's all right because it's good for whatever, the security of the state of Israel, the security of the Jewish people. So it's all right to have this separate but equal, hideous apartheid philosophy and policy, keeping the best for the Israelis and pretty much what's left to the Arabs. This is the reality, according to a lot of material that I've come across. You might not want to believe my words, folks. I ask no one to take what I say for granted. I only ask you to include my little tirades, my little expressions of support, of solidarity and support for the Palestinian people and for all people who live out there who really care to get along with one another, who would care to get along with one another. I ask you to hear what I have to say on these matters and then size it up to any other material that you have. But always, I demand, if I have any demand of my listeners, pay very close attention to the source of your material. Go do some real decent study, not just what you get on YouTube or on TV or other radio programs. Whether they are legitimate nonconformist radio services, such as Free Radio Santa Cruz here, or are mainstream, otherwise called corporate news sources. If you're comfortable living with those guarantees, those kinds of guarantees of the truth, the corporate ones, as opposed to the pirate underground services that you deserve, then you are only depriving yourself of every facet of truth in these matters. All right, I'm really getting carried away here. But you can see why they made a comparison between President Andrew Jackson's case for the removal of the Cherokee and the Creek and the Choctaw Indians. I can never remember that other tribe. I'm pretty sure it also starts with the letter C. Cherokee, Creek, Choctaw. If anyone can fill me in on that fourth name, be happy to call me here at area code 831-427-3772. As I was saying, though, side-by-side comparison of the December 1829 Andrew Jackson statement and the November 4th, 2013 Israeli government's case for the Begin-Prower plan. The main similarity between the two, as I read it, is both of them want to talk about the good side, the positive aspects for removing people from their native lands, and but don't really talk about the true reasons for their coveting these areas. In the case of the Israeli Zionists, this is all sanctioned by the word of God according to their ancient scriptures, their religious scriptures. In the case of the United States, it is sanctioned by yet another divine declaration, whether it comes from religious scripture or not, whether it comes from the Bible or not. The white European settlers of North America refer to this as their manifest destiny. Their manifest destiny to seize and occupy and become fruitful in the new land at the expense of the native people. We called it manifest destiny over there. They call it, in Israel, well, one expression is redeeming God's word. Redeeming the land at the expense of native people. Or put very simply, reducing God to the status of a real estate agent. How can you not say that? And towards following those two comparative scripts, it says, this Hanukkah, commit to shine light on Prower, the Prower plan, a special blessing for candle lighting. In Hebrew, please forgive my pronunciation, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Ha'olam Ha'olam Asher Yatzar Or Bishoshet Shir b'mavach v'kehila b'imai b'ilchama. Translated in English. Blessed is the holiness that fills creation, which creates light and darkness, song and struggle, and fellowship in times of war. candle number one, a light on the history of the Bedouin in the Negev Naqab. Bedouin have lived in the Negev Naqab since the 7th century. Before the establishment of the State of Israel, about 92,000 Bedouin lived in the Negev. By the end of the war, 1948, from 92,000 to only around 11,000 Bedouin remained. In other words, most of the rest of them who survived the war became refugees. Candle number two, a light on the, quote, unrecognized villages. By the 19th century, the historic villages of the Bedouin were largely fixed and stabilized with privately owned and collectively held pastures. Some 35 historic villages are now deemed unrecognized villages by the State of Israel and denied access to all basic services, including water, electricity, schools, and health clinics. Meanwhile, in 2011, the Knesset retroactively authorized 60 Jewish villages that were built without proper permits. That was in 2011. Candle number three, a light on the numbers. The Bedouin currently make up 30% of the population of the Negev Naqab, but are requesting recognition of their land claims on just 5% of the land of the Negev Naqab. Candle number four, a light on discriminatory policies and practices. The 70,000, that figure is in there somewhere after all, the 70,000 Negev Bedouin living in the unrecognized villages are citizens of Israel who are forbidden from building, buying, or selling a home, receiving full government services, or running for or voting in local government elections. I'm going to read that again for all the great lovers of this purported democracy in Israel. The 70,000 Negev Bedouin Palestinian Arabs living in the unrecognized villages are citizens of Israel, or so they're told, who are forbidden from building, buying, or selling a home, receiving full government services, or running for or voting in local government elections. Even local elections, my friends. Candle number five, a light on the JNF. The Jewish National Fund, the JNF, owns 13% of the land, just 13% of it, and explicitly only allocates it to Jews. The JNF is currently engaged in a $4 billion, quote-unquote, blueprint Negev project to ensure that the area has a majority Jewish population. Their plan includes economic development projects that seek to attract young Jewish Israelis and Jewish Westerners, Jews currently outside of Israel, outside of the Holy Land, to the Negev. Candle number six, a light on rural life. Rural life is not incompatible with modernity. Bedouin citizens of Israel should be given the right to choose whether they wish to continue their pastoral livelihoods in rural communities or move their families to cities, but should not be denied access to basic services or the comforts of modern life. In other words, it should not be an either-or proposition. You either pick up and leave your very ancient lands, the lands of your great-grandparents, and come closer to where existing facilities for health and education, etc., are, or remain there illegally under Israeli law and continue to be sick, unhealthy, uneducated, and without basic rights. Obviously, I threw that part in there. Rural life is not incompatible with modernity. Candle number seven, a light on international resistance. International human rights groups are raising their voices against Prawer. Avaz.org and Jewish Voice for Peace have together gathered over 30,000 signatures against Prawer. More than 775 rabbis, cantors, and rabbinical and cantorial students signed a letter opposing Prawer, which was delivered to the Knesset. Finally, of course, candle number 8. A light on the Bedouin community's alternative plan. Folks, the Bedouin's own alternative plan says here, Bedouin communities and Israeli human rights groups have put together principled guidelines for recognizing the villages instead of moving forward with the Prawer plan's mass forced displacement. These guidelines call for gradual recognition of Bedouin villages, ensuring access to education, housing, and an end to discriminatory planning. You can whitewash this all you want, my friends. Talk about how this gracious, altruistic Israeli government wants to do good by the Bedouins by uprooting them and moving them into an environment that they're just not used to at all. That they will probably end up, most of them, being very sad in, is my estimation. And not calling it what it really is, ethnic cleansing. More and more ethnic cleansing for the Jews of Israel to shape Israel to their liking. I think I can see how those of the Jewish faith will see a certain blasphemy here, or want to see blasphemy in such a blessing for candle lighting. Well, if you're going to be upset at that, that's certainly your problem. I say this as a non-Jew, as a non-practitioner of any particular religion or religious or spiritual practice. But I'll repeat it. It really is your problem. If you want to dismiss this as blasphemic politicization of the ritual, the main ritual of Hanukkah, the lighting of the 8 candles of the menorah. You can get stuck on that and refuse to see the validity in any of these political statements, for these statements are also reflections of the fact of what's really going on over there. Fascinating. And again, if you go to Jewish Voice for Peace's website, jvp.org, you can download, print, and take to your Hanukkah table the comparative scripts and the lighting of the candles and what they represent. You can take that to your Hanukkah table or to your Thanksgiving table. I think it's time for a little musical break here, folks. It's 4:05 p.m. on the west coast of Central California. This is the Mideast Madness Show, the Monday version, the weekday version, for November 25, 2013. I'm going to spring something really special on you here. You're used to hearing, most of the time, either Arabic or American Arabic music on this show, or good old Stuart Davis, my man Stu Davis from Minnesota. Try this one on for size here. It's coming, it's coming. Listen. Thank you. what y'all are hearing behind the sound of my own voice here is the opening parade at the Bali Arts Festival, B-A-L-I. That's right, the island of Bali in Indonesia. Recorded June 13, 1987. Every year there is a month-long festival of the performing arts in Bali, in Denpasar, the island's capital. The 1987 festival began with a spectacular parade through Denpasar of more than 40 ensembles of musicians and dancers from all over the island. The island of Bali. They're playing an excerpt from this parade with a lot of details about the different sections of the parade. Like you watch the Macy's parade, they will describe for you each new segment of the worm as it crawls up Fifth Avenue or whatever avenue it's going up and down there. He speaks of the Gamelan Angklung. Gamelan Angklung from North Bali, an ensemble of metallophones, gongs, flutes, and drums. Gamelan is a word you hear a lot in association with Belizean musical art forms. And yes, this album does have the Gamelan monkey chant. Do they use that term here? The monkey chant. I love this beautiful album here. I just happened to see it in my briefcase. Yes, I carry a briefcase to and from the studio. So if you see anyone walking up and down the streets of Santa Cruz carrying a briefcase, you can shoot them. I'm making it that much easier for y'all. As I said, I happen to have this particular CD with me. But I think it's worth noting that Bali, which is part of the nation of Indonesia, an island of a specific island nation of over, 4,000 separate islands? Or is it over 10,000? Minnesota has over 10,000 lakes. Maybe Bali has 10,000 islands. Or 4,000. At any rate, I don't mind pointing out that Indonesia is, by population, the largest Islamic country in the world. They are predominantly Muslims, of course. Say what you will about the life of those living there who are not Muslims, but as is evidenced by the music and singing and instrumentation that you heard just now, this largest Islamic country on earth is also a very multicultural Islamic nation. Not everyone in the world who is an Arab is Islamic, and not every Muslim is an Arab. Now, I want to give evidence to the notion that this program is not simply a matter of me, a Palestinian-American, native-born American person, native-born not in the sense that I'm a native Indian, but the fact that I was born in San Francisco and grew up here in California. The notion that this is not just a matter of me spitting into the microphone my ire against the big bad Israeli Jews, I fully recognize that in order for true peace and justice to be established anywhere, a high quality lasting peace with justice and reconciliation always reconciliation follows in one form or another. For it to happen anywhere on the planet, everyone, no matter how self-assured they are of their case and of standing up for their people or the people of their choice, as it were, one has to have the fortitude and the strength, the courage, and the honesty to look inward and see the things about those that they choose to speak for that are not so savory, that are the practices of their own people which might not be so defensible. That's a big part of why this whole effort on my part to do this show and to get the word out in solidarity with the Palestinian people sometimes really hurts, because I have to see things about Palestinians, some of them, that are not so pleasant to talk about, that I might not be able to defend. PCHR, Palestinian Center for Human Rights. This date, 25 November. Under the deteriorating human rights situation, Palestinian women wait for justice, but who will respond? The deteriorating human rights situation that we're talking about, of course, has to do very much with Israel's big bad population of their land and of their lives. The extreme manipulation of their lives and their culture. But one cannot always simply blame the bugaboo bad guy for every bad thing that happens. Under the deteriorating human rights situation, Palestinian women wait for justice, but who will respond? In 1999, the United Nations designated the 25th of November of each year as the UN International Day for Elimination of Violence Against Women. Please do not confuse this with November 29 that I was speaking of in the first part of the show. This is not the UN's declared International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. That's November 29. This, you're talking about November 25. UN, another UN declared International Day, in this case for the elimination of violence against women. Women. This designation comes as part of the UN efforts to curb violence against women in the world. Over the past years, Palestinian women have been extensively subjected to violence due to the exceptional conditions they live under. They have been subjected to violations of human rights by Israeli occupation forces, which have made them endure very severe living conditions, and on the other hand, they have been subjected to violence practiced against them by their own society. This year, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women comes while the human rights situation in the occupied Palestinian territory, especially in the Gaza Strip, is deteriorating. Israel has maintained punitive policies against the Palestinian civilian population, especially the closure policy and restrictions on the right to freedom of movement, which have impacted Palestinian women who are also subjected to domestic violence. The Israeli-imposed closure on the Gaza Strip that has been ongoing for the seventh consecutive year has led to very severe living conditions for the Gaza Strip's population, including women. Israeli authorities have continued to close all border crossings of the Gaza Strip, undermining the economic, social, and cultural rights of about 1.6 million Palestinians and denying them their basic needs. The closure has led to deterioration of the economic conditions in the Gaza Strip, and consequently poverty rates among Palestinian families have mounted to 38.8%, including 21.1% of the families that live in extreme poverty, according to the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics data in 2013. And I'm still right with you here, folks. Okay, continuing. The current deterioration of economic and social conditions denies Palestinian women their various rights, including the right to adequate living conditions, and complicates their lives since they are especially vulnerable to the deterioration of the human rights situation. Consequently, the social life of women has been impacted. The domestic violence against them has escalated. You hear this commonly in any situation of dire poverty and elongated periods of dire poverty. Continuing with the dispatch. The suffering of Palestinian women because of Israeli violations of human rights is not limited to facing the tragic impacts of the closure, as they are subjected to killings, injuries, detentions, and home demolitions. According to PCHR's documentation this year, Lubna Munir Alhantash, 21, was killed by Israeli forces in a crime that reflects their disregard for the lives of Palestinian civilians. On 23 January 2013, Israeli forces positioned at a military checkpoint near Al Arub College in Hebron opened fire at Palestinian civilian vehicles, killing Alhantash with bullets to the head and the chest. This, of course, in the city of Hebron, which is not in Gaza, not in the Gaza Strip, but in the West Bank. On 27 September 2013, Randa Abdul Hafez Al-Qasir, 49, from Rafah, died of wounds she had sustained on 1 May 2001 when she was near her home because of which she had been suffering from paralysis. According to PCHR's documentation, 11 Palestinian women have been wounded by Israeli forces in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip since the beginning of 2013. 11 women wounded by Israeli forces in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. At the level of domestic violence against women, 9 Palestinian women have been killed in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip since the beginning of 2013. 3 of these women were killed for the so-called family honor, while the other 6 ones were killed in incidents related to the phenomenon of misuse of weapons and security chaos. Palestinian women have continued to suffer restrictions imposed by the society, for which PCHR, and again PCHR stands for Palestinian Center for Human Rights. This is a press release from today. Palestinian women have continued to suffer restrictions imposed by the society, for which PCHR has repeatedly expressed concern. For instance, some provisions of the Education Law No. 1 of 2013 seek to impose segregation between the two genders at schools, including banning the employment of male teachers at female schools. Additionally, some domestic laws that may have flaws, and which violate international human rights standards, especially those related to the minimum age of marriage, are still in force. The marriage of 2 minors in the northern Gaza Strip has recently drawn the attention to the inherent flaws in relevant laws and the need to amend them to conform to international human rights standards. In light of the continuous suffering of Palestinian women, PCHR stresses that the population of the Gaza Strip, especially women and children, is badly in need for support by the international community, which has several obligations, including compelling Israeli occupation forces to respect human rights and stop policies that undermine or violate these rights. PCHR calls also for ending the Palestinian political split and activating the Palestinian Legislative Council as a step towards confronting domestic violence against women and ensuring consistency of laws related to women with relevant international standards. In this context, PCHR 1 calls upon the international community to promptly take an action to pressurize Israel to respect human rights, be committed to the international humanitarian law, and stop violations against Palestinian civilians, especially the closure imposed on the Gaza Strip, which deprives them, including women, of their rights that are ensured under international law. 2 calls upon the two Palestinian governments in Gaza and Ramallah in the West Bank take necessary action to stop domestic violence and prosecute the perpetrators of crimes against women. 3 calls upon the two parties to the political split to consider the interests of the Palestinian population and immediately end the split and activate the legislature to endure enacting and amending laws related to women to be consistent with relevant international standards. For more information, please call PCHR office in the Gaza Strip. Go to PCHR for that number. PCHR has an address here at 29 Omer El Mukhtar Street, El Ramel, P.O. Box in Gaza, the Gaza Strip, city of Gaza City in the Gaza Strip. Well, even considering all the many rather teetering typos and or slight mistakes in the use of English here or the translation into English, this is obviously a very well-written, very thought-out, if rather dry, rendition of PCHR's observations of violence against women and the severe circumstances that they and other Palestinians must continue to be subjected to. I started off by saying one must, if anyone really wants to see peace and justice established, they have to stand and be willing to accept thoughtful criticism of themselves and those that they stand for or claim to stand for. And then I read the piece, and it still has an awful lot to say about the sins of the Israelis, the Israeli government, and their military against the Palestinians of Gaza and Hebron, etc. So Israel is still highly implicated in several instances of the abuse of female life among the Palestinian Arabs. Of course, they're towards the end of this piece, they're talking about the absolute need for the split they're talking about in the Palestinian political entities. They're talking about the Palestinian Authority, which has political control, elected control, for what that's worth, frankly, over the West Bank, Palestinian people, between them, the PA, and the Hamas, or Muslim Brotherhood, Palestinian version, government in the Gaza Strip. All the more reason for those two to end their differences and reunify, at least for the immediate purposes of maintaining, establishing, and perpetuating civil life for the women that they're supposed to, and the women and all the other Palestinians that they're supposed to be governing in favor of. Now, here's one that I re-edited for you just last night. So what does a prosperous Palestinian future encompass? What does a prosperous and thriving independent and sovereign state of Palestine rely on to make their economy thrive? This is from the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. Plant an olive tree for a Palestinian farming family. Support the U.S. campaign and Palestinian farming families. Dear N, during a Capitol Hill briefing earlier this week organized by the Friends of Wadi Fukin, a room full of congressional staff heard stories about the impact of Israel's illegal settlements on Wadi Fukin, a Palestinian village near Bethlehem. Most of that sentence is in emboldened black letters, not because it provides the link to another web page, but I think they're just trying to impress upon the reader the fact that this happened in Washington, D.C. I'll read it again for you. During a Capitol Hill briefing earlier this week, organized by the Friends of Wadi Fukin, a room full of congressional staff, U.S. congressional staff, heard stories about the impact of Israel's illegal settlements on Wadi Fukin, a Palestinian village near Bethlehem. Fahmy Manasra and Ahmed Sukar traveled from Wadi Fukin to Washington, D.C. to share their village's story with lawmakers and the State Department. During the presentation, Fahmy and Ahmad showed attendees pictures of a newly built playground, a home for local shepherds tending their flocks, and a tent to welcome visitors to the village. Fahmy then showed demolition orders from the Israeli government for all of these projects, a playground, a home for shepherds, and a welcoming tent for visitors to the village. In a place where Palestinian human rights are rarely discussed, Fahmy and Ahmad asked the room full of congressional staff how Israel's theft of land, destruction of playgrounds, and construction of illegal settlements would lead to peace or make Israel more secure. They asked this of the congressional staff. Perhaps one of the most powerful stories Fahmy shared highlighted the centrality of olive trees in many Palestinians' lives. Olive trees. He described a time when an olive tree next to his home was uprooted to make room for an addition to the family home. While the tree was being pulled out of the soil, his mother started crying, prompting Fahmy to ask her what was wrong. She explained that olive trees had always been an integral economic and cultural part of her life. The trees felt like her own children. As we speak, the olive trees throughout the West Bank are being contaminated and destroyed by the encroachment of illegal Israeli settlements. The Israeli government has already confiscated 94% of Wadi Fukin's land, and Palestinian farming families across the West Bank are facing similar theft of their land and resources. While most of our work at the U.S. campaign against the Israeli occupation is focused on ending the policies and institutional support that undergird Israel's occupation, it is also important to support Palestinian families, like those in Wadi Fukin, who are suffering the daily injustices of Israel's continued colonization. Every year we work with our partners at Canaan Fair Trade and the Palestine Fair Trade Association to plant olive trees for Palestinian farming families. As part of the Trees for Life campaign, we'll plant an olive tree for a Palestinian farming family for each $25 contribution you make to support the U.S. campaign's work. If you can contribute $100, we'll plant 5 trees. I'm just finishing up this little dispatch here. Over the last 3 years of generous contributions from supporters like you have helped us plant 5,929 olive trees for Palestinian farming families. Please also consider taking a minute to shop at our Palestinian Fair Trade store. The olive oil, organic soap, and gift baskets make wonderful presents for the holidays. Your generous contribution will bolster our efforts to end U.S. support for Israel's occupation and help hardworking Palestinian families remain steadfast on their land. Sincerely, Mike Coogan, Legislative Coordinator. Okay. P.S. and a P.P.S. First P.S., first postscript, planting olive trees on behalf of a friend or family group is a great way to honor them during the holidays. We'll send you a personalized certificate for each olive tree you plant. And a postscript. There was an issue with the donation page in the previous email, so we've updated the page and it is now working correctly. Thanks for your patience and understanding. The website they give here at the very bottom is a salsalabs.com website. Perhaps if you go to org.salsalabs.com, you might successfully direct yourself to the U.S. campaign's trade here on behalf of Palestinian farming families, the Canaan Fair Trade, and Palestine Fair Trade Association. So, yes, this is most definitely a beseeching of donation from you for the sake of these families. U.S. campaign against the Israeli occupation is, of course, a not-for-profit organization. They have their own website, tryuscampaign.org, or I think what it is USC... AIO or USCIO, U.S. Campaign Against the Israeli Occupation, .org. Play with those words. Google U.S. Campaign Against the Israeli Occupation. See what you come up with. Because it just ain't here, folks. But okay, request for donations, undeniably it is. And at the risk of bringing my own people down upon me, I'm going to tell you, out of my own personal insecurities and fears, I will not donate to this cause, not because I hate Palestinians, not, and certainly not because I hate olive trees. Earlier, I was talking about how would a purported free and independent Palestine thrive and create an economy. At this point in time, it is centered on their most treasured and most utilized natural resource, the fruit of the olive tree, olives and oil and soap. Sounds kind of silly to some people. Oh God, those Palestinians think they can make a go of it on a bunch of olive trees. Well, the fact is, okay, why will Ren not contribute? I am not inherently stingy. There are a number of causes that I contribute to. In fact, I'm a annually paying member of the Jewish Voice for Peace. And other causes as well. This article ended by giving you the statistic, 5,929 olive trees. Supporters of the U.S. campaign have helped them plant 5,929 over the last 3 years. 5,929 olive trees over the last 3 years. But there are two or three or four times as many as that, over almost 6,000 olive trees that the Israelis have uprooted out of the selfish desire to expand their illegitimate, illegal, wrongful Jewish-only settlements in occupied territory. The occupation alone, per se, is illegal under international law. The Israelis have uprooted thousands and thousands of these trees. In the process of doing that, and they have even uprooted new trees that have been replanted by the Palestinians and their supporters in solidarity. I just can't see doing this. Under the current circumstances, it's the sinking ship, scenario, where if you're going down, you don't want to stick around that much longer and try to bail the boat out. You want to get the hell out of there. But unfortunately, for so many Palestinians, this is translated into refugee status, leaving the country. I see the extreme value of olives and olive trees to the Palestinian people and the economy that they're trying to develop, and that which Israel is systematically destroying piece by piece. And they do so with armored bulldozers and other tractor-like equipment, which is supplied to them, paid for by the Israeli government, ultimately by the U.S. taxpayer, manufactured from Caterpillar here in the U.S. of A. Hence, Caterpillar being a major focus of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against corporations and individuals who support Israel. But this happens to be a situation that I, for one, will not donate to. For that reason, I see it as a dead-end proposition until the word really gets out amongst American voters and our elected representatives in D.C. about this ongoing massive criminal enterprise that Israel is committing against the Palestinian people. What's the point of continuing to replant trees if they're all going to be uprooted and thereby they succeed in uprooting the rest of the Palestinians, either by turning them into refugees or killing them off, or somehow assimilating those who they transplant to cities or whatever? I know I'm sounding really bitter here, but I'm just giving this to you as my personal opinion and expression of disgust in the current scenario, in the current status quo. I'm sorry for my friends who will see what I'm doing and talking about here on the show as perhaps not fruitful, not helpful. But be that as it may, and I have purchased olive oil at great cost here in California, olive oil from Canaan Fair Trade and the Palestine Fair Trade Association, olive oil, something called za'atar, which I became acquainted with from my long ago late grandmother, my father's mother. Za'atar is an herbal mix, including sumac, sage, and sesame seeds. That's sold by Canaan and the Fair Trade Association. And olive oil and soap and stuff like that. Unfortunately, it's extremely expensive compared to what you can get at your neighborhood Safeway or Raley's supermarket, etc. Anyone else, anyone out there who cares to counter my embittered position on this is by all means welcome to go to the Canaan Fair Trade website, whatever it is, I can't find it. Palace Canaan, that's C-A-N-A-A-N, Fair Trade, and or the Palestine Fair Trade Association, or go to the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation and make, you're free to make all the donations you want to them. I'm certainly not ashamed of bringing the matter up, nor my oh-so-deranged opinion about this. Well, folks, we're winding up another Monday edition of Mideast Madness here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's 4:49 in the p.m. right now. Now, I haven't taken a look at... Okay, here is a 129-second video from Jewish Voice for Peace. Watch this Hanukkah message from Jewish Voice for Peace. A little child holding up a sign that says, "This Hanukkah," and then a senior citizen lady in the adjoining picture holding up a sign that says, "Be courageous." Happy Hanukkah from all of us at Jewish Voice for Peace. We've put together this short video for you. May your year be filled with light. Sincerely, Cecily Saraski, Deputy Director of Jewish Voice for Peace. Let's check this out. Picture of people holding up signs, Palestinian self-determination, support Palestinian self-determination, JVP, say no to the expulsion, pop-ups, killing children in Gaza won't protect children in Sderot, if you want peace, work for justice, end the Israeli occupation, objectification, discrimination, and injustice, not Jewish values, uprooting olive groves, human rights abuses, checkpoints, we atone for youngjewishandproud.org. The occupation delegitimizes Israel. Stop demolishing Palestinian homes and livelihoods. This Hanukkah, think for yourself. These are all messages held up by signs of people around the world, including in front of the Paris's Eiffel Tower. Rock the boat. Use your voice. Be fabulous. Whoa. I like that one. Speak your truth. Be courageous. Love unconditionally. Work for justice. Be the light. This Hanukkah, all of us at Jewish Voice for Peace, rededicate ourselves to creating a world filled with peace, justice, and light for all people. Hanukkah Sameach. Hanukkah Sameach. JewishVoiceForPeace.org. Please forgive my I don't want this to sound like just another fancy begging for donations for another cause, but the combination of the music in my reading the signs might have been a tad too just a tad too much artistically indulgent for what we're talking about here. I wish you could have seen those pictures. All right, folks, please join me again next Monday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for Mideast Madness on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're streaming live at freakradio.org. One day we may even return to the airwaves on an old-fashioned broadcasting transmitter. I, for one, am trying to make that happen. The important thing is we here at FRSC are still here for you online 24 hours a day, barring the very, very rare and occasional technical glitches that might take us off the internet air, as it were, for short periods. Free Radio Santa Cruz is here for you. The next time you'll hear me on this frequency actually will be Saturday for the weekend edition of Mideast Madness at 11 a.m., 11 in the morning on Saturdays, and I'm always here for you. On Mondays at 3 p.m., don't forget, you can send a message to this program. Send a message to me on behalf of the program, MideastMadness@GMX.com, MideastMadness@GMX.com. Thank you. Till next time, this is Ren signing off.